Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's a little redundant. It's a little repetitive. I know that every team goes through a learning experience, but it's not going to. It's got to be, you have to learn individually and as a team going forward, I think. It wasn't a good enough effort from any of the guys in this room, honestly, and we just had to be better. Call a learning experience, honestly, just don't forget how this feels because it sucks.
It's my job not to let it snowball. We'll address it, we'll deal with it, we'll go over it. It's hard, painful, but cannot. I think you've got to look at, we got a little shorthanded in the third period. You know, we played without dolls. That got us in a little bit of problem. But when you're shorthanded, you got to believe even more in your system, and you got to manage the puck even better. And we didn't.
Panic after the disco. The world's largest event was held here on Saturday. The Sabres coach and players choosing to use that word, not ours, theirs, in describing how the only home loss ever that saw them in a four-goal advantage materialized last night against Colorado, losing in regulation 5-4. And they are now losers of four straight as they await Winnipeg tomorrow. Marty, it was really interesting to hear you analyze what was being said by the players about last night's game immediately after. And then once you got to hear the coach, how it all kind of came together. Because I would say that you almost anticipated that at some point they were all on the same page in the sense of, like, yeah, this is what it feels like and this is how it materialized. And that's why we use some of the words we're using today. Again, not our words. Mm-hmm. They're coming from those who were involved in the moment.
Yeah, unacceptable, panic, loss of composure, all of these words that we heard from the players and Lindy Ruff yesterday. Look, is this team good enough to win games? Is this team, like, I look at the team. I think the team's good. I think this one yesterday, I haven't been in that situation multiple times before, and that's why you learn from them and you adjust and you try different things, but to me, that's on the players. And I would sit right in front of the players and say, that's one of those games where I've been in the locker room and I look around and that's on us. That's on us. There's nobody else that can come in and make us play better, make us play harder, make us, you know, chip the puck out, make us clear the front of the net, make us manage the puck. There's nobody else. We know what we have to do. The system is there. The system had the team up for nothing after one. Yeah, okay, Georgiev was not good in that, but you still manage to put a very good quality chance, 6-0 high danger chances in the first period. So Georgiev or not, you're probably up 2-0 instead of 4-0. Okay, great period. And in the second period, you relied on Luukkonen a little bit more than you would have wanted to, but you're still up 4-1. And I used to think, and this was a bad, bad way, and I talked to a sports psychologist about it, but I used to play the worst-case scenario thing in my head when I was playing. If we're up 4-1 after two, I'd sit in the locker room after two periods, and I'd think, you know, for us to not get a point tonight, I'd have to give up three goals in the third period, which I don't do often, but I'd have to do that, right? So it's a bad way to look at it, but last night, when you asked me about Tage Thompson and the you know, maybe a hat trick or whatever in the second intermission, my first thought was, well, maybe he'd get an empty net for a hat trick. And then I'm like, there's no chance the Colorado is going to pull the goalie. There's no chance. This is a 4-1 game. Like, maybe.
No, they didn't.
Well, they did. Exactly. There was no chance because they didn't have to. But that's where my mind was, is that this game should have been in full control. And it lost control because the players made multiple mistakes and compounded mistakes after, you know, you make a mistake, I'm going to try to do something, I make a mistake, and now it's two mistakes, three mistakes, and it's in the back of the net. And you could go goal for goal, and I'm sure they're going to review every goal. But it was in the offensive zone, in the neutral zone, in the defensive zone, with and without the puck. It was structure, you know, their defensive zone coverage, guys running around. You know, why do you have a defenseman up at the blue line on a point shot? Like, no, that, protect the front of the net. Like, it, to me, that was on the players. And I get it. Look, we see these players all the time. And if somebody said to me, Marty, what'd you think of the Colorado game? I'd be like, oh, you guys let it slip. That was the players. They let it slip, and that's what happened.
The power play didn't help widen the lead, nope. But where does it rank in the talking points right now?
Well, where it ranks is that it comes back to the words that you just mentioned, like that were being used in the locker room after the game. You have a minute 20 on the power play at the start of the third period at 4-1. Mm-hmm. Where is the awareness, the composure, the control, right? Like,
and urgency, probably,
and
right?
Urgency, like, urgency,
like,
yeah.
Is it hard to create urgency when you're up 4-1 going to the third? Because I was thinking, like, if you're 0 for 15 on the power play in 5-plus games heading into that moment, like, I don't know whether every situation feels different. Like, you can speak better to that than me, obviously. But I'm just wondering, in those moments, is there like, hey, this is a golden opportunity for us to not only put the recent woes behind us, but put this thing away.
Especially with the way the second period had been played. Like, if you are dominating for 40 minutes and you get a power play and you're up 4-1 and it's like, okay, we've got that game, right? And if you're not playing the Colorado Avalanche, because Colorado is one of those teams that you're like, hey, they only need a little crack in the door and they're going to blow that thing wide open, right? Nathan MacKinnon, he gets angry. And he gets going.
He does.
And he looked angry. And the Moose, Rantanen, he looked angry, right? And there was that happening too. Mm-hmm. But you saw it happening in the second period. I know a lot of times it's words that are being thrown out in the locker room. Oh, let's get one right away, guys. Let's go. But I have to feel that in that situation, it was more than words. It's, hey, Luukkonen kind of bailed us out in a second here. Mm-hmm. We have a power play. And we've been crappy on the power play of late. Let's go. Let's get going. Like, these are, and I'm going to use radio and TV words here, but there was some F-bombs and some things thrown in locker rooms many times, even though you're up 3-0 or 4-1, because of where you are and how the game's going. So, but I always go back to, how do you think the game? How do you manage the game as players? And how do you, like, see the game, right? And how does it evolve? The penalty is about to expire. You have to have that internal clock. You have to have that awareness. The penalty is about to expire. Mm-hmm. Keep it low. Back out. I don't have three guys down below the goal line. The penalty is about to expire. How many times do we see it? Guys come out of the box, get a breakaway. We've had it happen to us. It's something that happens on power play all the time, but you're up 4-1. You don't score on a power play. A minute 30 in the third period, and you give up a 4-on-2. And on that 4-on-2, mm-hmm. you know, some guys are going for a change. Like, that cannot be, like, coaching. That cannot be anything else. That's like, what are we doing here, guys? Players, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And then it's 4-2. You're like, okay, well, let's manage the puck. And then you're in the offensive zone. You're looking to make a play. You lose the puck. You're in the defensive zone. You lose the puck. You rim it around. You don't get it out. Shot, goal, again, on a rebound because you start running around. Yeah. Like, that's players. And I know, look, after last night, you're going in for meetings. You're getting ready for Winnipeg. And you're going to want to support one another. But you also have to review what happened in that game against Colorado. And you have to be honest about it. And I know that I would look around, and I can feel it. I can see it. The guys in the locker room that I've played with on great teams and on not so great teams looking at each other and say, that's on us. And I think last night is what I heard from the players in the locker room. That's on us.
Is last night, I know statistically it's a one-off in the sense that surrendering a lead that big had never happened at home before. There was one other time they had a 4-0 lead in franchise history and lost It was in the 80s against Calgary. They lost 10-4, believe it or not. Is it a one-off, or in the sense of how it unfolded, why it unfolded, or is it cumulative in the sense of they had lost the previous three, and did you see things that were happening within those? And they obviously weren't for entirety of games based on how well they played against Minnesota and at times against Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything ever to sense that something like that is coming?
No, and really, what I was so encouraged after the first 10 minutes of the game was the response. You lose 3-0 to the New York Islanders, and that's your response. Yes, let's go. Like, this is Colorado coming in. Mm-hmm. And you had that response after what was a not-so-good game against the New York Islanders and the lack of producing offense in now 7 games, right, since the Flyers game, where it didn't happen. Out west, you won 3 games in a row, but the offense wasn't clicking. You're playing well defensively. I'm like, looking at that game, not only were you creating offensively, mm-hmm. Colorado never had the puck. Kale McCarr looked like Kale McCarr is human. Like, there was so much that was going on that was good. I'm like, the response is great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why many people always say momentum doesn't carry from games to games. I get it. You go into these cycles, right? You go into the, well, we're scoring a lot of goals in these 4 or 5 games stretch, and then, oh, we're not scoring a lot. There's some ebbs and flows in the season. But So you want to look at a negative to a positive. Like, the Islanders game was a negative. It got turned into a positive that quickly turned into a negative again. Like, so this negative, do I anticipate it to carry over in a negative way? Mm-hmm. No. But do I expect it to carry over in a positive way? No, I can't, because it's separate. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
It's a different thing. But the danger here is trying to overcompensate. You turned the puck over. You gave Colorado opportunities. Now, Colorado is going to, like I said, blow the door open if you open it a little bit of a crack. But now, do you try to say, we're going to manage the puck so well that everything is going to be an icing or a chip out, and we're not going to be able to create any offense because we don't have the confidence that we can make plays with the puck? That's what it felt like yesterday watching the third period. I don't have the confidence that I can make a play and that we can enter the zone and spend 40 seconds in the offensive zone creating. So I'm going to hang on to it a little longer. I'm going to chip it out. And then, then when you do that, you bring in some very, very bad things, especially against a team like Colorado.
Kind of crazy that in their 5-goal comeback, McCarr did not factor in offensively. He mm-hmm. clearly factored in how they were able to move the puck, hang on to the puck, create chaos. That's what Cale Makar does. And I mentioned it in the post game last night, and because we're sitting here asking, you know, what now, what next, you're going up against a Winnipeg team that, by the way, after the incredible record-setting 15-1 start, has also lost 4 in a row and lost 7 of 10. They got punted on home ice last night by St. Louis 4-1 as Jim Montgomery goes to 3-0-1 behind the Blues bench. What I mentioned in the postgame last night, and it's certainly not earth-shattering, very aware of this trend, and it's in part because the Avalanche depth has been challenged through injury, but not entirely. Like, Jared Bednar knows how he's going to win games, and that is to lean on his absolute top forwards, which, of course, includes Lekkonen now that he's healthy again.
And play him a ton.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he leans on them to the extent that they play 22 to 26 minutes a night. My question, the long way to get to it, is they haven't played since Saturday. They're home for a week and a half. Everything is spread out with no back-to-backs. In a situation... or not just last night, in situations moving forward, do you see more situations where if we need to right the game, grab a hold of it, do you think the Sabres are constructed in a way where Lindy Ruff could lean on Thompson for 24 minutes, where he could lean on Tuck, who you mentioned not that long ago should be like getting Selke consideration here because of his overall game this year. We see the shorthanded goals. That's only a part of it. You have to be good at 5-on-5. And so, like, should that be a consideration? Like, with what you're seeing with some of the, you know, the younger depth players not maybe impacting or controlling the game as much as they individually would like to do right now?
I think you may see that. I think you may see changes in lines when it comes to a third period that's slipping away. And maybe you say, okay, well, now we're going to go with Thompson, Tuck, Zucker, which was the line yesterday. Why? Mm-hmm. Because, well, we have some experience there and we have guys that can handle it. And then, you know, you may have to go with McLeod and maybe even with Cousins and Peterka and say, you know what, like that's going to be a line. And then you're maybe not going to rely on Quinn and Kulik and maybe Benson as much, but if it comes and you win games, great. You're winning games because you're adjusting things. But if you're not able to finish and win those games, then you're also maybe blocking guys' development. But we're not at the development stage right now. We're at the stage where, okay, we got to find a way to close out games and win games. Like in the third period yesterday, Tage Thompson played 5.5 minutes, I believe. Like Jason Zucker played just under 6 minutes. 7 minutes Zucker. Thompson was a little bit the same. The 6.5. Could you have used that line for 9 minutes in the third period when things got slipping away? Maybe.
I don't think
Lindy Ruff had that plan in mind. It's 4-1 and 4-2 and 4-3. And you're like, okay, well, let's go. Like, I can see that everybody seems to be struggling a little bit. I can see that we're running out of juice a little bit because we're chasing. But yeah, I could totally see that. Look, these games, you got to close them out. And, you know, you maybe have to rely on Thompson and Tuck and Zucker for 8.5, 9 minutes. Yeah. And you have to rely on Dahlin probably for 10, but he wasn't there in the third period. So he left the game with what Lindy Ruff said, back a spasm and something from that he's been dealing from in training camp. So right. that's a big loss, maybe even more. To say, hey, we're going to go with veteran guys because we don't have our stud on D that can eat all those minutes.
I could be completely wrong, but I sensed hesitation when you were trying to go through the lineup as far as, you know, players you might want to lean on a little bit more. And I'm going to guess that part of it is if you see a night where it ended 5-4 for the visitors, but you had a clean night plus minus wise from Krebs, Malenstein, Obey Kubel, and you saw them playing between 11 and 12 minutes. Like, is that the type of line that you would utilize more? Because that's a pretty, it's a reasonably significant amount of ice time for them already. Like, I don't know how much higher you would typically go, but based on how everything unfolded, this is why I'm asking you the question. Like, could you see, because obviously Obey Kubel and Malenstein, well, Beck feels older than he is as far as games played in the NHL, but it's more based on his style, right? Obey Kubel, of course, won a cup with Colorado, and he's got experience. But I'm just curious how you see evolution of roster usage here.
Look, for me, I think that I look at Krebs, Malenstein, and Obey Kubel, and you should be able to trust them in that situation.
They were out there with 3 minutes left, by the way.
They were, but they also were on the ice on the McKinnon 4-4 goal. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's because they were on the ice? No, I think that they lost the battle on the half wall. Mm-hmm. Malenstein went down, and because he went down, Power felt like he needed to go at the point, right? And that's when Rantanen turns around, shoots it on net for McKinnon to deflect it. I think they lost their structure. And, you know, sometimes it's going to happen. But that's one of the goals. They gave up 4 in the third period. Mm-hmm. So I do think that my first thought when thinking of it is I would trust Krebs, Malenstein, and Obey Kubel or even Lafferty in those situations more. I would probably try to play them, you know, 6-7 minutes in the third period and have Thompson at 8 minutes. So now that leaves you 5 minutes for something, somebody else. Maybe Cousins got 5 or 6 minutes in there with Paterka. I mean, you got to play to win. And, you know, this is a 5-game homestand where it's game one. You're not traveling. You're playing every other day. There's a lot you can do there. But again, I'm going to say this, even if I debate this and think out loud as to, okay, play Thompson more in the third period, play maybe Krebsline more in the third period. Don't just give him 4.5 minutes, play them a little bit more. That's not why the Sabres lost the game. The Sabres lost the game because when you were on the ice and it started in the second period and you had a chance to make a play, a lot of players, like Stuck said, it's everybody, not good enough from anybody. They all had a way and a part in letting Colorado walk back in there. So that's the reason why it happened.
Right, including the group of defenders closest to Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, where Lindy talked about them not being strong enough. And that's not just
the defense.
And this is
not the first time this year.
Right.
This is not the first time. He's talked about we're not strong enough in front of our net or puck management, and we'll address it, right? There was a
So what do you do then?
Well, what can you do? You're not going to
I mean, there's always options, obviously.
And yeah.
Like, just Tyler go back to Lafferty, by the way. Like, for people that don't know, Lafferty obviously isn't playing due to injury. Greenway's out due to injury. Samuelson's still out due to injury. And now potentially Dahlin out due to injury. And it still doesn't compare to the Avalanche run of injuries and some other teams. So these are just facts. But there's always extra players.
The Islanders had more injuries and you lost to them. And Colorado has a ton of injury and you lost. And Tyson Kozak is not going to come in and all of a sudden it makes the team responsible and, you know, with this great puck management mentality and all of that. No. You have a 23-player roster in the NHL. It's not like all of a sudden you can take 10 guys out and put 10 guys in and say our team is going to look way different now. And do I think that the team needs to look way different? No. I like the team. I like Paterka. I like Thompson. I like Tuck. I like Zucker. I like the way the team is built. The team is put together. Even those, you know, depth pieces that came in, the McLeod, and I like the way the team is shaping up. But when I see the team going out there and turning, you know, the puck over in areas that I can see myself on the bench and guys, you know, guys, that can't happen. Well, when you're the next group going out there, that can't happen again. Like, you can't make that mistake over and over again. And like I said, at 4-4, it happened 7 straight giveaways that the Sabres basically, like, that game could have ended 7-4. It ended 5-4, but it could have ended 7-4 because the giveaways and the panic that was in their game really just let Colorado walk all over them, and then you can't come back from that.
Right, and maybe the most obvious piece of evidence to exactly what you just said was, I think Colorado had 2 to 3 significant chances within 40 seconds of the Sabres calling timeout.
Yeah.
Like, and if anything, that's your pause window, right? And you stabilize and have less stress in the next minute or so. So that was almost foreshadowing, like, okay, this really still could get away from them, unfortunately, based on their inability to minimize some of these mistakes. So I'll ask it again, maybe in a different way, but what next? Like, what do you see them doing roster-wise here?
I don't see them doing much roster-wise right now because I don't know what the status of, you know, Rasmus Dahlin is. And if you're going to go without Dahlin, even if it's just tomorrow night against Winnipeg without Dahlin, do you insert Gilbert in there? And now, does that mean you want to have a steady group of forward that you can say, okay, let's see how you respond, right? There's already going to be some changes if Dahlin can't play. We'll know tomorrow morning. I mean, the Sabres will have their morning skate and then they're off. We'll talk to the media. So we'll know a little bit more about that. But, like, what is there that's going to change what happened last night in your roster? Again, You're not going to say, okay, well, I'm putting this on Jack Quinn, and I'm going to sit out Jack Quinn, and I'm going to insert Tyson Kozak, and there's the reason why last night happened. Or I'm taking Zach Benson out because he didn't get the puck out on the wall on the 4-3 goal. And you know what? That was his job to do. Well, that's not just Zach Benson. And that's not just, you know, Clifton who turned the puck over on the 4-1 goal. Like, there was plenty to go around for everybody. Mm-hmm. But if you just take one player out because you have Tyson Kozak ready to come in and make his NHL debut, well, are you letting everybody off the hook by saying that's on that guy? Because I picked this one out of the 12 forward to come out of the lineup. That's on that guy. No, I don't believe that. I don't believe that it was on one guy. And I think the sound after the game was, it's on all of us. So what, you can't take all 12 out? Right. Like, that's not going to happen. And that's that wouldn't be smart anyway to think that two or three would come out and let's call guys up from Rochester and let's make... No, that's not how the real world works. That's not how the real NHL works. Mm-hmm. So I say you give that group one chance against Winnipeg tomorrow to say, hey, you're going to really stick to the structure and give me everything you got in block shots, in, pucks out, one-on-one battles, all of it. Give me everything you got. You're getting your one shot. Because Winnipeg, you're going to need that. Despite the fact that the Jets lost 4 in a row, you're going to need that to win. And if you don't, then, okay, there will be shorthanded bench. There will be changes to be made after that. But I think you give that chance. You address it, and you're tough with them, but you give them that chance to make you at least feel like that group is the right group to get it done.
Amherst are home tonight to Utica, 7 o'clock start at Blue Cross Arena, still without Osland. Obviously, Kozak is up with the Sabres. And real quick, is it fair to wonder that if and when the Sabres get healthy, whether Jiří Kulik ends up back in Rochester?
It's fair to wonder. It depends who and how this, you know, health comes back. If it's Greenway coming back healthy, that takes a top six spot. Then
top nine.
Was that a top nine? I should say, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
A top nine spot for Greenway. Then I could see that being okay. Jiří, like, you don't have that top nine spot because Greenway makes a big difference in the way that you can defend, in the way that you can stop those type of slides. But if it's Lafferty coming back, I think you've got your four fourth liner guys that are in and out. That's Lafferty coming back to me doesn't affect where Jiří Kulik is in the lineup and the chance that he's given. And really, Jiří, again, had a pretty good looking tight yesterday. He's had some good looks. He's looking like a younger player, but a player that deserves to keep playing in the NHL right now, unless you ran out of room in a top nine situation.
It wouldn't have felt any better had they lost in overtime last night. But based on the number of other teams in the Eastern Conference that did go to overtime and get points, the standings would have at least been a little more palatable.
There's a meme going on right now on X, and it's basically the Islanders got another loser point. It's a meme that's going on.
One out of every three games.
But it's like when you're a meme, that's because you've done it a lot. But the Islanders keep getting points despite the fact that it's the Montreal Canadiens and it's a 2-1 game. And where are the Islanders going? Like, you know, produce, score, whatever. The Canadiens get a goal from Patrick Laine and then Nick Suzuki in OT again. But the Islanders are a meme now. They got another loser point last night.
All right, we continue after this on Sabres Live. Lots to get to from around the NHL. As always, your input at Sabres Live on X. Stay with us.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on Sabres Live. And we, Sabres, are thrilled to introduce the Saberhood. Sorry, let me try this again. The Sabres are thrilled to introduce the Saberhood Sisterhood, an event series designed to connect women through the game of hockey. First event is the Sabres Wreath-Making Workshop at the Buffalo and Erie County Botanical Gardens. It's on Saturday, December 14th. You can visit sabres.com/sisterhood to sign up today.
Do we have a game that night?
For the delivery.
Do we have a game on
the 14th? Saturday, so I'm going to say yes.
I'm going to say yes.
What do I know?
I think we do, because then the 15th, we're in Toronto as well. So I believe that is one of those games that you and I are going to be on location.
Yeah, they're in Washington on the 14th.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I would like to attend that. I would love to make a beautiful wreath for, you know, the holidays, Sabres wreath, and be at the Botanical Gardens at the same time. That would be great. Therefore, maybe I'll just do two at once. I'll go to the wreath making event and then come to the studio after.
I have a question for you.
Oh, okay. Many questions. I have one online too on X. Somebody's asking question, but yes, go ahead.
It pertains to Alex Tuck's commentary after the game.
Mm-hmm.
Is horse bleep a French word?
No, it's not a French word, because okay, it was never used in a French way. Like crotte de cheval does not sound good. So if you say that,
sounds like an appetizer.
Exactly. It's more like croque monsieur or, you know, cuisse de grenouille. You know what cuisse de grenouilles are. So frog legs.
Prairie oysters?
But they're actually frog thighs. That's what we call them back home. We don't call them frog legs. We call them frog thighs. So that's why cuisse de grenouille. But anyway.
As you know, Alex said pardon his French to the media. So I just thought I'd bring 2 seconds of levity here on the heels of a tough loss.
Maybe his horse is French, and that's why he calls it French horse, you know what.
Right.
But the question I got on X right now is from Scott, and he says, Marty, don't moves need to be made like trade, wave, scratch, send to Raj to give them accountability they crave, mm-hmm, at the end of last year?
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I get that there's many different tools you have to send a message of accountability. You ask me, other than the fact that Jordan Greenway is not in this lineup right now, do I like the lineup? Yes. Do I think this team could be competitive and should be a playoff team? Yeah, I believe it. They're one game under 500 now, and there's a lot of teams in that cluster in the Eastern Conference. And 3 games ago, they were, you know, 2 games over 500. Like, okay, it happened, right? So you took a drop. But I like this team. Is this the time to say, we're going to send guys to Rochester, we're going to sit guys out, we're going to waive, we're going to trade, you know, Quinn because he's only got one goal and that's an empty net goal, or we're going to trade Cousins? And I don't think that's the time right now. We're the first week of December. Is it getting to be like, hey, the first half of the year is going to be done? Where are you going to be? Yeah, it's going to be like that. But a week ago, everybody, national media are talking about, hey, the Sabres are, look at the Sabres, look at the Sabres. Now we're a week later and it's panic at the disco. Like, okay, I think there's other ways to send that accountability message. And, you know, guys used to walk into Tortorella's meeting and look at the video coach and say, how many clips today? 37. Ugh, how many am I on? You better buckle up. Like, that's one way to send a message. When you know that you're going to be showing clips in front of everybody and you have to look at your teammates in the eyes and say, yeah, I failed on that play, or I messed up on that play. That's one way. And is it a tool that's being used in the league? Yes, absolutely. Just like sending guys out and waving them and all of that. But I don't think that today I'm looking at waving and trading and sending guys out and all of that. I'm looking at putting it right in front of their eyes and saying, this is what happened, and really make that happen, like single out guys in that way.
Right. Very fair question, though. And especially when, you know, Tage was as to the point as he could be after, when he said, we've had too many wake-up calls.
Yeah. Like,
too many. And so, therefore, you can't keep using that terminology, whether it's, you know, it's not a real valid question now because we all know the answer, right? Like Tage said it, there's been too many wake-up calls. So I understand.
Ruff almost got to that point too, because early in the year, he said something like, you know, like the standard has to be better, like that's to be higher. And right, we have to raise the standard. Like that's the big thing, raising the standard. Well, I mean, That was not the first time that he talked about not, you know, playing to the up to the level, not doing the right things. Like, the standards has to be raised. It takes time to get it done, but you know, you're 2 months into the season now. You got to continue to push upwards.
Mm-hmm. Good. We're right at 40 minutes after the hour. That means we can do 40 seconds on the Four Nations face-off. Go ahead.
Well, 2:30, Sweden and Finland are going to be announced. I would anticipate Dahlin, Luukkonen, and Jokke Aho to represent their respected countries. Just because, look, Dahlin and Luukkonen, yes, definitely earned it in their play. And Henry, I think, has been fine. He's played fine. Yes, he was a scratch, but Finland and Sweden have to pick from players that are in the NHL. And there's just limited numbers of players that they can pick from. So I would anticipate those three to be named at 2:30 to their respective countries. But with Team Canada and Team USA, it looks as though there won't be anybody else. There won't be any Tage Thompson or Alex Tuch on Team USA. Chris Johnson from TSN, reporter Chris on social media, he said sometime in the evening last night that he thought Tage Thompson and Cole Caulfield were going to be left off the list for a couple of more experienced players with Team USA. I think Team USA's got a great roster, so they can kind of see what needs they have, which would be unfortunate for Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch. I thought Alex Tuch would have a shot as well, not just Tage, but I thought Tucky had played really well this year and could go in and be a penalty kill and a physical power forward type guy. But it looks as though these guys will not make it. We'll know at 6:30 tonight with Team Canada and Team USA being officially announced.
What else from the NHL? I tend to steer maybe too often in this regard, so I'd rather you start the proceedings as far as other stories from last night and or today in the NHL.
Okay, well, the big story from last night was the Columbus Blue Jackets in Calgary, right? And the Gaudreau family being on hand, Johnny and Matthew's, you know, obviously parents and everybody was going to be on hand. And it was emotional. We know that Johnny Gaudreau's played in Calgary for many, many years. He's still very, very much loved over there. And the Flames end up beating the Columbus Blue Jackets 3-0. And there was links into everything, right? Like Rasmus Anderson, a good friend of Johnny Gaudreau, with Michael Backlund and, you know, getting involved in the first goal. And it was, so to me, that was the big story of last night. The Flames, you know, we talked about, you asked me yesterday, you stumped me yesterday, the hottest team in the NHL of late, and it was the Columbus Blue Jackets. Well, the Flames are pretty good as well, and winning 3-0 on that emotional night was significant for the Gaudreau family and for the Flames.
Flames haven't been as good lately, but they also, you know, it was when I was talking about how good Columbus was, it was largely on the back of Zach Werenski and his hot streak. Well, they scored, but had it negated for offside, and Werenski's streak would have continued. The Jackets would have been up 1-0. And from that point on, it was just a very low shot game, so hard fought. Marty, there are so many things from last night that are almost unbelievable. And again, remarkable in the resilience and the courage shown by so many, most importantly, the Gaudreau family.
Yeah.
Have you actually looked at the game sheet, the physical game sheet from last night?
I did not look at the physical game sheet from last night, but I am going to pull it up as you.
They announced Johnny Gaudreau as the first star.
Okay.
So on the game sheet, that appears blank because it would have to be an active player. The second star was Rasmus Anderson. The third star was Michael Backlund.
Yeah.
When they announced Johnny, Guy came out and was surrounded by Backlund and Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how they keep all of them, every single person, player, family member, I don't know how they continue to exhibit the strength that they do.
That's incredible.
It was, that's like, It truly was incredible. And if you have not been able to tap into any of what happened prior, during, and after last night, I would encourage you to go to sportsnet.ca for their game recap of everything with the video links of Guy and Jane being interviewed. There were so many, just in this quick read from my standpoint on this on Sportsnet, so many incredible moments, including one that Johnny's widow, Meredith, got her first tattoo while she was in Calgary just now. And it's Johnny's autograph.
Yeah, I read that story. She talked about it in a pregame interview. She was being interviewed for Sportsnet. It was number one. Like I don't know if it's now translated into the healing portion of it all, but every time when it started, the first few games in Columbus, there was a game in Philadelphia, there was a game obviously, and now in Calgary, every time you're kind of rehashing all of those emotions, but I'm starting to feel and looks like it is becoming a little bit more healing to have that support of everybody every time that they are being shown on a stage like this. But yeah, the tattoo is an incredible story again. We talked about Sean Monahan yesterday. He was there every step of the way. The Calgary Flames did an amazing job. And it made me think of, obviously, just quickly, relations with the Sabres. Is we showed, obviously, a welcome back video during the game yesterday for Casey Mittelstadt. The very last thing in the Casey Mittelstadt video was his goal against Chicago in overtime, RJ's last call, and him saying Casey at the bat, Casey Mittelstadt, and he scores in overtime. And these moments, they leave you with something that you take with you the rest of your life. And what happened in Calgary last night with the Flames winning and the way they won and the family there and, everything else, that has to feel good and healed in some way, everybody that was there.
It was as if Johnny was still playing for Calgary. When you read Guy's comments, he could not have been more proud of the players that he became close to as a hockey dad in Calgary. It was truly remarkable. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres Jets tomorrow around the NHL. The Bruins are 5-2 under Joe Sacco. Jonas Korpisalo is 6-2-1 on the year. The Bruins got the benefit of no penalty on Pasternak right before their overtime winner, and that was a little bit surprising. Pittsburgh's won 4 in a row. Spencer Knight had a tough night. He allowed 5 on 16 shots in the Panthers' overtime loss. And allow my final words to be about San Jose once again, because now, having gone 10-6-3 in their last 19, in that stretch of time, only Washington and Minnesota have more points. Marty?
Yeah, no, San Jose, like we said, Sabres winning in San Jose wasn't an easy game. That was a tough game to go get, and they did, so that was good. For me, you talked about the Winnipeg Jets in town tomorrow night. Former Winnipeg Jets, Patrick Laine, with his first real game, first regular season game in over a year, scored on the power play from the left side. He got a shot. Didn't get the one-timer. He catched and released, went over the glove of Sorokin. And that was a welcome sight, knowing that Laine has dealt with a lot of personal side of things, issues, and obviously the injury in training camp. He's getting a new opportunity in Montreal and scored in his first game. It was pretty cool to see.
Minnesota-Vancouver had a great clash. The win streak on the road to start a season is over for Kevin Lankinen, but it's an 11-game point streak now as they lost in overtime on the Kaprizov winner set up by Rossi, and it was a thrilling conclusion to an excellent game. And we look forward to more of the same when Buffalo and Winnipeg clash tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you then.